Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse, my favorite part of the day, because we get to talk to people who are doing cool things, people you're familiar with, but going a little deeper, perhaps, than the headlines, hearing about them, things that they're doing, tours they're on. And Chris Kattan, you'll immediately recognize the face, actor, comedian, in some of your favorite hits from over the years, SNL. There you go. You're framing it out for us.
I'm framing my face, yes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Welcome to The Pulse. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Bill. Good to see you.
Appreciate you doing it.
Right, yeah, so, I appreciate you. How are you doing?
I'm good. You're on tour. How are you doing?
I am on tour. Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm enjoying going out and entertaining people, and that's the best part, making people laugh. So I'm enjoying it.
I love it. And coming to Philadelphia, October 24th at Helium this weekend. It's going to be a great show.
Yes, it will be great. Philadelphia is a great city. I love that city.
Love it. All right, let's backpedal because we try to get the whole story on The Pulse.
Okay.
So how did this get started? You have an interesting background, parents and the whole nine.
Yeah, you want me to start from my parents?
How'd you get into this? If they're part of the story, then
my
we can
birth?
Start
there. You want me to start from birth?
So I was born in the hospital.
Yes, I had parents like most people. And where should I skip to? They got divorced when I was two. And my mom met my stepdad, and they moved to a place called Mount Baldy, California, which was a national forest. So they were the custodians. My dad lived in Sherman Oaks, California. And he became one of the founders of the Groundlings. And everybody knows the Groundlings, the improv group on the West Coast, the highly acclaimed group of improv and the character work. And I would live weekdays in Mount Baldy, which was in the National Forest. And there, my mom and stepdad studied Zen Buddhism. And on the weekends, I go see my dad, and he would perform at the Groundlings. So it was two different lives that were completely different than one another. So that went on for years. And then I moved to Seattle, went to high school there, went to Bainbridge Island High School in the Puget Sound. Then I moved back to my dad's because I wanted to be a Groundling. I always wanted to be a Groundling because I used to see my dad perform at the Groundlings and do character work. He did a lot of Jewish characters because he was Jewish. and I was so impressed, you know, by his work and his creativity, you know, and his improv that I was just blown away. And it was the biggest influence of my life. So without my dad, I wouldn't have gone in the direction that I did go. And then I was introduced to Saturday Night Live. And I started watching with the group the Eddie Murphy time.
Yeah.
And that was my hero. Eddie Murphy was a legend, so he still is. And that's what influenced me to get on SNL. So after I graduated at Bainbridge Island High School, I moved to my dad's in L.A., joined the Groundlings, took the classes, as you have to take in order to be a Groundling, if you even make it that far. Mm-hmm. And became a Groundling, and that's where I met people like in my class were Jennifer Coolidge and Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry. And we all auditioned for SNL, and that's how we got on SNL, basically.
So it really did get started like very early. There's people who are born into this. There's people who kind of see it. Like you saw it from an early age, and that was your focus. You just followed that course.
Yeah, I was about 6 years old. Yeah.
Okay. So doing that, starting on that journey, auditioning for SNL, that was none of the, you did the improv, but were there the comedy circuit? Was there, you did improv, grow with it, and you're like, you know what? I should be on SNL.
Well, I did, you know, I was really good at character work more than improv. I mean, I did improv and I loved it. But I was really keen on creating characters and creating different characters. So I had a few characters before I joined the Saturday Night Live. And so I was ready to go with a couple characters. And they all made it on the show. So I rode that wave for a while. You know, I did, the Roxbury guys.
Yeah.
With Will at the Groundlings. I did a character called Mr. Peepers, which was half man, half monkey, and I would eat an apple and hump objects. That was always fun. I did that on SNL as well. So those were the two characters I created at the Groundlings.
So you actually brought them with you. So those weren't like you brought it to them. They didn't help you create those.
Correct. Yeah, I was at the Groundlings when I created those characters.
So you get SNL, and we've had Tracy Morgan has been on with us, Sarah Silverman has been on with us, and they kind of tell the stories of how SNL changed their life. Sarah's was a little different. She said getting fired from SNL changed her life. How did getting SNL kind of change things? Like, that's a huge step.
Well, it changed not just my life by being on the show, you know, a dream come true, but I've never been to New York before, so... I joined not mid-season or the beginning of the season like everybody else. I joined like 6 weeks prior to the end of the season. So that was a different time to join. And there was more pressure on me to create because of that. You know, I didn't grow into the cast and mold with the writers just yet. I didn't know them just yet, so because I didn't start at the beginning of the season. I started later, so I had my characters to rely on. And the first character I did, also I did this character at the Groundlings, was named Sewell Forrester, and he was a double talk guy. He was he spoke in gibberish. Mm-hmm. He was a substitute teacher, and he would go, "Good afternoon, I'm Samara. I'm gonna be here 7:35. Miss Some of you may remember me in photography. What is this? Don't see the red eyes in you." So,
okay.
So that was, we did the read through like everybody else that week, and it didn't get a lot of laughs, only because I think I was new, and people were like, "What's he doing here? Why is he here at this time?" You know. So, but Lauren trusted it, and he gave me my shot. And I got a lot of laughs when I did it for dress rehearsal. The audience loved it. So, and it became one of my reoccurring characters. It made it, the first sketch of the night. So my first show, my first sketch that I, introduced was the first sketch of the night, which is very rare. So that was pretty cool of Lauren to give me that shot.
So it's like a hierarchy of the best stuff is supposed to kick off the show after the whole opening and what have you. And you worked your way into that immediately.
Yeah. And it wasn't my fault. I mean, you know, it was because the audience, you know, they were the judges, you know, they you can't help but judge the judges, and the ones that judge the most are the audience themselves. So that's who liked it the most. And that's how I got it on.
So everybody, the characters you're talking about, and especially, I mean, it was such a huge show, the characters continue to grow. But with such a highly watched show, did that change your life? What's it like when you get on there, you kind of get established, not that end of the season, because you ended up doing multiple years. How does doing something like that actually change your life? You can't walk down the street, you're getting movies.
Well, that took a while until people recognized me. I mean, New York is such a great place. They, like, yell out, "Hey, Chris!" You know, I got, "Hey, Chris." They knew my real name. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to do the character sometimes on the street. You know, they go, "Hey, la, 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 la." Just like the gibberish guy would do.
Yeah.
But it didn't really catch on. I mean, I didn't really get the attention until I introduced the Roxbury guys, which I did at the Groundlings as well with Will. And those were the head-bopping guys, of course.
And, I did the Roxbury.
You know, the Roxbury guys. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got the most attention. People on the street in New York would bop their heads and in unison with their friends. And that was the first sign of like, wow, I guess I really made an effect. I guess people are watching and these characters are working, you know, because I always watched, you know, when I watched SNL, I was, you know, I was transfixed by, I was in awe of Mike Myers and his work because he created so many different characters and they were so catchy and they had their own different nuances and different isms and their slogans that they had, you know, like I'm as happy as a little girl and, you know, more butter and all those things. And I thought that was part of the trick of having a character, having something to latch on to was a wise thing to do. So I try to make my characters have something memorable about them. So they weren't just characters, but they had something, something quotable, something you can quote.
Well, and it, I mean, it clearly worked because those characters resonated to the point where we just mentioned Night at the Roxbury. And there are other examples of like these became larger than life. And kind of getting on SNL was your goal. Once you got there, was it everything you thought it was going to be? Like you were already a fan of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know. I think I was, when I first got on, I was left to work a lot alone most of the time because everybody was already blended in because it was like, you know, 6 weeks left to the end of the season. So I didn't really get the opportunity just yet to work with the writers until the next season, and that's when I bonded. And it's always much better. It's a lot more fun to work with other people. I mean, that's what SNL's about, is camaraderie and companionship and chemistry. I didn't realize how important chemistry was. But I had worked with Will Ferrell already at the Groundlings, so we had a pocket full of characters all ready to go. So we did those on the show a lot, too. I knew Molly a little bit, and Sherry I had worked with as well, Sherry O'Terry. So we had some characters to introduce that on the show that we did at the Groundlings prior. So that was lucky. I was very fortunate to have created those characters already.
Lucky you did it and brought it to the biggest stage. Like that was that's interesting. And I don't think most people know that. I think that people think you kind of get there, you're funny, you know, you can do these different things and they shape it. And in your case, you actually brought it to the table. Yeah, that's cool.
Well, when you audition for SNL, you are asked to do two or three, I think it's three, original characters that you have created. So whether or not you use them later in the show, when you're on the show, if you get the show, you are asked to do them in the audition. So I did Sewell Forrester, the gibberish guy. I did Mr. Peepers. And I did a guy just humping a couch, basically. And it, so I didn't do the Roxbury guys. I didn't do Mango. Mango came years later. That was like a kernel of an idea that was based on my dog, Winnie. She was a Dalmatian, and she would like if she turned away from me, her butt was facing me. And she would turn around and give me like a come hither look. And out of that, I thought of, I don't know why, but I thought of a person. I thought of a stripper named Mango that was born in Miami. And
From the
everyone
dog.
fell in love with Mango, whether you're a woman or a man. Like what?
From the dog. You get the come hither look from the
Yeah,
dog
for the
launches
dog.
the
Yes, for the
stripper
dog.
character.
All this came for the dog, so I have my dog to thank. But yeah, so that became very popular. I think that was one of the most pop. Well, the Roxbury guys were probably the most popular characters.
So you do something like that. You launch the characters. You're on a hugely popular show. And then it kind of goes from there. So then you're doing movies and TV shows and Dancing with the Stars. It's a whole nother story. And you just continue to do those things. Was any of that surprising to you that you got what you wanted and wow, look at all this?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, it was like, oh my God, already they're allowing me to be on the show, and they like the characters. The audience like the characters. So I rode with that, I think, that Lorne Michaels, the head of it all, you know, the king, he called and asked if I was interested in doing a Roxbury movie. And then I called Will, who's my best friend at the time, and I said, oh my God, do you get a call too? And we're like, these characters, they don't talk. how can we do a movie? So we had to create voices for the characters in order to make an hour and a half film. But Paramount, who he had a deal with at the time, he wanted to do a Roxbury Guys movie with Amy Heckerling, who did Clueless, who was a producer. And so we came up with the concept, and the studio loved it. And that's how it was born. So we found voices for them that were like, hey, Steve, what's up? What's going on? Score and all that.
And had to create all of that. So it is, over the years, you've created characters, but you also have done impersonations. You've done a lot of different things throughout the year. I'm always curious, comedians, when that's one of your talent, how people respond when they see themselves in you or see the presentation of themselves.
Well, I never got a lot of response. I mean, I did David Lee Roth, which was an obscure impression. I would just do zibbity bop, diddy bop.
Okay.
I ain't got nobody. I ain't got nobody. And never got a response from him. you know who I expected to get a response from was Hathaway, who wrote the song What Is Love, Baby Don't Hurt Me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we played that song every time we did the sketch, but we never got a thank you letter or like, we just revived that song. You know, you're getting all the money.
Yeah, you paid a lot of bills for them by bringing that song back.
Hathaway did very well. I did see him like 2 years ago at a party, and he was very, very nice. And he didn't thank me, but that's okay. Not like I was looking for thanks, but he was very kind. And but you couldn't help but realize that this is the guy that wrote this song that we bopped our heads to and became an anthem, really. You know?
Yeah, you did well for them. So I mentioned casually, you're blowing up and you're having this career and you're doing all these things. I mentioned casually Dancing with the Stars, and later on you did a memoir. You started kind of sharing behind the scenes stuff. And I guess because I didn't see it, I read about it. Very matter of fact, Dancing with the Stars was talking about you were a little stiff while you were dancing, and you casually kind of revealed that you broke your neck on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, I did. I broke my neck, and but it's fine now. You know, I healed. I had my fusions. You know, a lot of athletes break something and they have it repaired. But it did affect me. It did affect my life and affect work, my capability of working as an actor. And
how do you break your neck on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, well, it happened, and you know, I went backwards on a chair during a Golden Girls sketch. I played one of the Golden Girls, and I was simulating eating a pie and choking on it, and I went backwards and broke my neck, and I had this like atrophy pain, and Lauren was very kind, and he fixed me up with his doctor, and they said you need to have surgery as soon as possible, but I didn't want to be put on the bleachers, so to speak. I wanted to be part of the show. So I kind of didn't tell anyone really about it, except for those that needed to know, like the producers and Lauren and some friends and family members. But I didn't get the surgery until the end of the season.
That's crazy.
So it was, you know, it was painful. It wasn't immediate pain, but it grew into pain later.
That's
but
crazy.
I had no idea that I broke my neck. It didn't feel like it.
It's like the athletes playing hurt. You're like, I got to finish out the season. I got to go out there for my teammates. I want to keep going. Can't lose my spot.
I didn't want to be like put off to the side and not able to perform. That would like kill me not to perform.
Wow. All right. So you're on tour, you're continuing to do things. And again, Philadelphia, October 24th, this weekend. What's the tour look like? What are we going to see?
Well, I'm excited. It always depends on where I'm at. And Philadelphia is a great city, so I'm sure I'm going to have fun. I've been at Helium before, and they're great guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. I think, as I remember, Philly has a really sharp sense of humor. They have really good comics there, you know, almost as good as New York, or, you know, a lot of good people come out from Florida as well, and LA, of course, and Austin. You know, a lot of people come from Philadelphia, so I have to make sure my comic chops are up to par. Helium's a great club, so I'm really looking forward to doing that. I especially like doing crowd work.
Okay.
That's my favorite thing to do. So I get to interact with the crowd because they love it. And, you know, I love it too, because that's where my improv background kicks in, what I learned at the Groundlings. So, you know, that's the funnest part for me. I do have, you know, a set, as they say. I talk a lot about SNL, and because that's what the audience wants to hear. They want to hear about SNL. They come to the show and they recognize me mostly from SNL. Mm-hmm. There are films and TV things, but it's mostly SNL that they recognize you from. So they want to hear about those stories. They want to hear about, you know, more cowbell. They want to hear about, you know, the mango and stories behind it, you know. Yeah, that's what they want to hear mostly. So I do a lot of SNL stories.
And you've been doing this for a minute. You still love doing the touring?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I it's really good to stretch your humor and be put on the spot. But it was different for me when I first started. I never thought I'd be doing stand-up. I never thought so until my agent approached mm-hmm. approached me and said, you should try stand-up. I think you do very well. And I was a little shy of it, because in sketch, you're usually on stage with someone else. Plus, you have cue cards. So even though you've written it and you memorize most of it, it still feels safe to be on stage with another person, you know. Plus, the chemistry is with that person. And then you get the drive from the audience, and it's just gold. But I miss doing that. I miss that the most.
So then that leads into our next question. If you miss doing that the most, what's next? Is something else coming up, something we should look for, continuing with the tour? Or you're just at the point where you're just having fun doing whatever you're doing?
No, I'm having fun. I mean, you got to have fun doing whatever I'm doing. But I have written a script with my partner, and we're just in the middle of finding financing for it. So that looks good. It is a vehicle for me and for a few other people. It's a comedy. Mm-hmm. And it's getting a lot of buzz. So we're excited about that. I do realize that in this business that, and I learned it early on, that it really is up to you in many ways. A lot of the work has to come from you. Nobody's going to go up to you and give you a role of a lifetime, usually. At least it hasn't happened for me quite yet. I used what I have and put that into the script. You know, it's easier that way, you know, as a performer and a writer. But I wouldn't have learned how to write had it not been for the Groundlings.
Okay.
You know, they really teach you how to write, and they teach you how to write well. Because that's the backbone for comedy, I believe, writing.
Has it changed? I'm curious, because social media and do-it-yourself and YouTube and all of these different things are so prominent now that you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
Like, has that kind of changed the way you focus on it? And, like, in theory, if you wanted to, you just do it and kind of put it out to your following.
Yeah, well, to answer the first part, it has changed drastically. I mean, I know a lot of people, not specifically, but I do know that a lot of people have sent in a video or have been already on YouTube and have had a massive following. And that's what helped them get on SNL. I mean, you send in a clip of you doing stand-up, or it's already there. You could already have 5 million viewers. Mm-hmm. You know, and word of mouth, it comes out, and then you get chosen to be on SNL because of that footage. And that's a great way to find talent, you know, it's a great way. Instead of, you know, like in my position, I was at the Growling, so people had to fly in to LA to come see you. And then you only get like that one chance opportunity, that one time that you're going to perform that night. And you don't know how the show's going to go and how you're going to appear. You just don't know. But when it's on YouTube, it's forever there for everyone to see. And it's amazing the power it has, how much it's just taken over. You know, it's it would have been a different, it would have been different for me, I think, you know. But a lot of my characters rely on the energy that I get from the audience. So if you're online and you're doing YouTube and stuff like that, you're not getting any energy, any feedback like you would have been getting when you were in the Groundlings.
Got it.
I feel like that really helps you.
I feel like people like you who create, who write, who do that, like this, the opportunity to kind of do it yourself would be an, a cool opportunity. Couple more questions. I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you spending this much time with us. So again, Chris Kattan will be in Philadelphia, October 24th, Helium. Tickets are available. Get online and grab them. You're going to have some fun. You're going to have some crowd work, some interaction, all the good things.
Yeah.
But we wrap up every episode of The Pulse. The whole theme of the show is use your voice for good. That means so many different things to different people.
Okay.
When you hear that concept, use your voice for good, what does it mean to you?
I assume it means... speak the same voice that you started with. Don't change it.
Okay.
Something like that. Use your voice for good.
Okay.
I don't know. Am I right? Am I close?
I don't know that there's a right answer. Like it's.
But what is? There must be an answer.
Use your voice for good. It's just how your platform, your voice, your characters, whatever, are making things better.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
So you want me to answer how I how if I use my voice for good?
I think we could just leave it there.
No, just help me.
Yes. How have you used your voice for good? What does that mean to you?
Use my voice for good. I guess find that voice that is Chris Kattan's voice and only he can speak that way. Voice, that's like a Chris Kattan-ism or something.
Okay.
I guess that would be the answer.
That's a good answer. I will take that one.
Okay.
All right, Chris Kattan, thank you for spending so much time with us. I appreciate it.
Of course.
We'll see you when you come into town.
Yeah. Oh, you're in Philly, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you love it?
I love Philadelphia.
Yeah,
born
it's a great
and raised.
City.
It's a great place to be. Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with comedian and actor, SNL alum, some really cool characters, Chris Kattan. Cool hearing some of the experiences, some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that we certainly wouldn't be familiar with, hearing the development of all of his characters, everything that went into his career. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Do me a favor, hit like, follow, subscribe, whatever it is that shows up on your screen so you get a notification every week when another episode of The Pulse comes out. You can follow me on social media at BillAFox29 and download the Fox Local app so all of our episodes are right there at your fingertips on demand. It's pretty cool going back and looking at these. Gotta be pushing, 150 episodes that we've done so far. Go back, look through them. I'm sure there will be some people that you really enjoy seeing and hearing. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.